All right, in Titus 1 now, we have in this next section what we commonly hear referred to as the qualifications for those who will serve as overseers in congregations of the Lord's people. Please notice again from verse 5 the mention of the word elders. This refers to men of experience and maturity. And then notice in verse 7, it mentions the word overseer, or in some of the older versions, it may be translated bishop. This will tell you what work there is to be done. And then notice in verse 9, it mentions being able to give instruction in healthy teaching, and that is the task of shepherding. The feeding of the flock, as we will find it in some other passages. And those three ideas are what is in view here in helping to put in order what remained in the churches on the island of Crete. Now, notice especially in verse 9, the phrase about halfway through the verse, so that he may be able to. I bring that up to say that I think this is the crucial piece of information we need to have in mind when we begin to work our way through this list. I am a bit uncomfortable with the term qualifications, although I've heard it ever since I've been a Christian, and I realize what is being spoken of here. I almost wish we would use it as descriptions of, or the equipment, the necessary equipment for this task, if we think of it that way. But if you'll underline that word, be able to, you'll have the line of thought that Paul is following in these verses from verses 6 through 9. He is describing not one kind of man who is better than another kind of man. He is not saying in this passage that Christian men who are like this are closer to God than Christian women who are like this. What he is saying is that for the task that he has in mind, he wants Christian men of this kind, because this is what it will take to do this kind of work effectively. That will be very much, you'll notice that as we go along. And what I wanted to try to do with this, I brought a copy of another version with me, and I've had it with me for the last 2 weeks. It comes to the day when I want to use it, and I've left it on my desk in there. That's kind of how things go for me. I want for us to try to look at these terms Paul uses by comparing how they are translated in various ways. Now, Just to bear in mind as we start what we said last week, the elder is who we're talking about, elders. Overseers are what they do, and shepherd is how they do it. And Paul describes the kind of men who are equipped to do this. First off, verse 6. If anyone is, I'm just going to list these and we'll look at how they are translated. If anyone is above reproach, how else is that translated? Blameless is the most common. What else? All right, we're not to that part yet. This phrase, above reproach or blameless. So, would this be describing men who never have any weakness or any shortcoming or any fault ever in any case? There are no such men. That's right. And Paul, remember John says in 1 John 1 that if we say we have no sin, we are liars. We're deceiving ourselves. So we don't. What we're talking about here is this is the kind of man against whom no indictment can be brought with regard to his character. There may be human weakness in every man, but this is the kind of man who has a way of life where there is not a wanton habit of sin of some sort in his life. If you look at this kind of man, you will be able to tell when he has made a mistake or when he has had a weakness, because that's not usually who he is. You see what I'm getting at here? This is the certain quality of individual that it will take in this case. And as you follow this line of thought down through the passage, you'll be able to see why, especially if you look at verse 9 and verse 10. This man is going to need to be able to give instruction in sound doctrine and also to rebuke those who contradict it. When you begin to rebuke the gainsayer or to try to correct the contradictor, what will he do if there is any reproach to be found, to be sustained against this man? Who are you be talking about? When I would get into it with my brothers growing up, when the umpire of all disputes at our house would enter the picture, that'd be Mom. Then the common line of defense was, you've heard the argument before. He started it, or but look what he did, or some sort of thing like that. And that's the situation here. This is a man of godly character who has a way of life that everyone knows is patterned after Christ. Now, that doesn't mean that this individual immediately is an overseer of a congregation. Notice this line of description does not stop here. There are other things. There may be many people who are above reproach who are in no position to be able to teach sound doctrine and to correct the gainsayer. And there are other statements in this passage too that define this or help to describe it. Now, look at the second of these where it says,
yes.
Oh, that's not the right one. Thank you, Barney. It's green. I should have said it's green. Okay, thank you. All right, the husband of one wife is next. Now, there are all kinds of discussions about the eldership that I notice in our world today. One of them is, does this need to be a man? Let me just say there is a group whose name of their group is patterned after the word for elder, which is presbyter, which insists that what's being talked about here is faithfulness in marriage, and that this could be a woman as well as a man. I would say that when we are dealing with putting things in order and setting in order what remains, we're on the best ground if we stay with this, and we would think it would be hard to be the husband of one wife if this were not a mature man that we're talking about here. Now, the second thing that comes up is, if this is talking about a man, must the man be married? Or is it just saying that this is the a man who has no improper relationship as far as marriage goes? Both, isn't it? It's saying both. The husband of one wife would say that this man is a faithful man who has a wife and who is faithful to her. Now, that leads to several other questions. Well, first one is, why is this a... If I'm right in saying this describes the kind of man who is able to do this... Barney, thanks for all your extra trouble there. If this is the kind of, if I'm right in saying these are descriptions of the man who's able to do this, why would he need to be the husband of one wife?
Back then, didn't they have four?
All right, there were. Christianity was born into a world in which there was the practice of In the Greek and Roman world, a very habitual practice of multiple divorces and marriages and so forth. And I know William Barclay tells about a woman who was married for her 21st time, and the husband had his 24th wife, and that gives you some idea. Also, there was the practice of polygamy in the New Testament world, especially in some of the areas of Asia Minor where Paul took the gospel, and places like Crete, where Titus is left to do his work here. So what does the husband of one wife mean for the elder? Well, it means, first, that he will be someone who has demonstrated an ability to maintain Christian relationships in his own personal life. That will be something that he'll have to help other members of the body do. Many of the problems that elders, sometimes the most tense problems that elders end up having to try to shepherd people through, are problems with relationship to husband and wife, Tom?
Maybe this is a stretch, but could it also be as an example because of the culture of that time where people were worshiping many gods?
That's possible. That's possible that that's one of the things. There's a common view, too, that this quality here is certainly going to have a bearing on the having raised children together, and then on things like hospitality, and then things like, let me just give you a simple illustration like this. What if an elder of the church has to try to go to help a lady, a Christian woman who's a member of the church, and this Christian woman has some very difficult personal circumstances that she is having to try to cope with. Can you see the wisdom in this brother having a faithful wife at his side who also has the wisdom of having lived for the Lord to help him deal with that matter? You can see the ways in which this would be involved. Now, there are a couple of special circumstances I want to mention with regard to this that come up. The construction of the phrase is such that it means let me say it this way, the Greek teacher that I had in college would say that this word would describe a one-wife kind of man. All right, you see what I'm getting at? This is the kind of man who would be the husband of one wife. And the circumstances in his life. For example, if a man had been at some point forsaken by an unfaithful wife, and if she had left him, and it's completely against his desire, if he sought to rescue the marriage and did everything he could, would that man then forever be unqualified to serve as an overseer of a congregation? I think there are some circumstances here where the congregation who knows the man best is going to have to decide whether it's expedient. But he is not disqualified, in my view at least, on the basis of what this word says. It's talking about what kind of man he is. What if he is widowed and remarried? He is still the husband of one wife. All other things being the same here, he is the same kind of man. If you see what I'm getting at, I think that needs to be understood and borne in mind. And in my experience, at least, in watching not just our congregations but other congregations that where I've lived before, or times when I have been invited to come to congregations that were in the process of appointing elders and asked to teach on these matters. And what I've noticed is it is a temptation for people to look at the surface issues and to ignore the spiritual issues involved. I'll give you an easy situation. I remember a case where we had and it wasn't here, so you can't go to thinking of who am I talking about, where we had a situation. We had a faithful brother who had been one of our best teachers for years, and who had been willing to help however he could in the life of the congregation, and had been willing to go to people and try to help save their souls. But he had one child. His child was a faithful Christian and was married to a man who had become one of our deacons in the congregation. We had people who objected that he did not have children. We had another brother who had never shown an interest in teaching in any way. He was a good man, never shown interest in teaching in any way, would never go to someone who was a straying, so to speak, to help rescue him and so forth. But his wife, he and his wife had raised a good family, and they were there. So the congregation appointed this brother, but not this brother. And I thought that they were missing the point by looking at the surface issues instead of the work and the deeper issues. And sometimes that can happen with things like, with matters like this. It's just important, I believe, to realize we're talking about the one-wife kind of man here. And that's a helpful thing. Now, go with me to the next one. We won't be able to. All right. His children are believers and are not open to the charge of debauchery or insubordination. So say it this way. Children are believers. And we'll talk about the other two terms in just a second. In 1 Timothy 3, do you remember the explanation given for him showing that he can rule his own household in this way? What was the reason for it? All right, how will he manage the house of God if he has not done the work of trying to rule his own house? All right, think about this for a second with us. First, is it talking about how many children they have? All right, I've heard the argument, well, if a man has shown that he can deal with the personalities of more more children than one. All children are different, so if he has shown that he can work with more than one of them, he'll be a better elder. I suppose that's open to interpretation. I certainly do agree that children are different. However, in a lot of ways, children have the same problems, I think, and needs growing up. All right, that's true. That's right. But if you, biblically speaking now, which is where we are here, if I take a passage like Ephesians 6, where it says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, and where it says, fathers, don't provoke your children. Is that father obligated if he just has one child? It says children. You see what I'm getting at. This is talking about the children one has and not how many children one has. Ruth?
I would agree with you that one disqualifies them, but having more than one child, you want to wind up dealing with more squabbles than how to get your children to deal with each other better, and that might help in some of the problems.
Well, that's true as well. And of course, children, it may be the children just have an especially good mother, too, who's able to do these kinds of things. The idea is, though, that this man's children are going to be children who have been led by him. And his leadership with them has been helpful to them. Now, believers, faithful children, has been taken to mean children who are loyal and true and so forth to their parents, or it has been taken to mean children who are Christians. Which way should it be understood? I take believers to mean here what it generally means in the New Testament, and that is that they are believers in the Lord. I think that if you compare it with 1 Timothy 3, and where it talks about the man ruling his own household, the implication is that these children are under his influence and not out on their own. And I don't believe Paul is meaning to say that it's possible for any parent to raise a child for whom it is impossible to fall away. Follow what I'm saying there. It is not possible, unless we're willing to say that there are some individuals for whom apostasy is impossible, then we can't say, can we, that a parent can ever raise a child so that it's impossible for that child to go through a stage when they're unfaithful to the Lord. At least I don't see how that can be said. It means, I guess what I'm getting at, is some of these statements, there is a straightforward, either they are or are not part of it, and there's a side of it where, all right, the congregation has to decide about the expediency of it. And what we've said about the husband and one wife. Brother Wayne Jackson, for example, who has a little commentary on the pastoral epistles he calls Before I Die, Paul's letters Before I Die, he argues that the best explanation of this phrase here is that in the world in which the gospel was introduced, some people became Christians who had been through these marriage problems, and he argues that there was a time of accommodation where these adjustments had to be made for what God allowed due to the hardness of hearts of the people under the law of Moses, and so that people were not just abandoned and ignored, but while people move to what is taught under Christ about faithfulness in marriage. And so he's saying that the leaders of the church had to be chosen out of men who set the proper example in this way. That's an interesting thing to think about. Now, what about the not open to the charge of debauchery or insubordination? What are the others? How are those two terms translated in your versions? All right. Wild and disobedient. The New English Bible says, under no imputation of loose living, and who are not out of control. What else? What other terms?
Riot and unruly.
Riot and unruly. All right. I wanted someone to mention the unruly part, because look down at verse 10. The reason for the work of these men on Crete is described here. For there are many who are what? What? Rebellious. It's the same word as the word for insubordination or unruly in verse 6. The elder is going to have to work with in trying to redeem people from this characteristic, and he can't do so if he is burdened by the same characteristic at his house. That's the idea. Now, while they're under his guidance or under his rule, so not wild and disobedient, not either rebellious or loose in their way of life or in their reputation. All right, that's a general idea. All right, next one. What is the next phrase?
Bill?
Yes, Tom?
I have a question.
Okay.
And it's not meant to sound the way it's going to sound. It's meant with all sincerity, but you know, man, one time who was an elder, whose daughter became pregnant, he resigned as an elder. 5 years later, when she was out of the home, grown and married, he was reappointed as an elder, and they said, well, he's no longer responsible for her. I don't mean that to be critical of him one way or the other. That's not meant to be just a question about him, but I don't understand where the difference is.
All right, I don't believe the question can be answered with the information you provided. Now, and here's why. Just as we said here that above reproach, I said we're talking about the man's character, his way of life, what he is known for, then down here with the children, it's not saying that the man's children never make a mistake or have a fault, and if they ever do, then he's disqualified from the eldership right at that moment. It's not saying that at all. Would we want our overseers to be men who have never been required to show grace in dealing with, or mercy in dealing with the people that they have to love in their families? I'll be right with you just a second. The question would have to be dealt with by a congregation. All right, has this problem that the young person, the boy or the young lady has this been a symptom of an overall wild and riotous life and character that is disrespectful and disobedient and has resisted every effort to try to be trained properly? Or is this something which was a bad choice, a sinful action that has consequences? And another way to answer the same question would be, if this man had a son who had fathered that child, would he be treated the same way? I don't believe that the Bible teaches that as soon as an elder's child has a problem, he's disqualified. I do believe it teaches that if this man has a child whose entire way of life is like this, it can hurt his ability to serve in this way, and it might get to be unwise for him to try to do so. Another part of the same question is, what if this man has three children, and one of them, two of them are faithful in that way, one of them isn't? I've seen situations where that has to be dealt with as well. So prayer for wisdom is called for. Danny, what were you going to ask?
I was just going to say, you're using the 1 Timothy reference a lot, and when you're talking about this example, I thought about it in that respect, how whenever there are elders in the church, even when you dispose of someone, the elders aren't held accountable for that person's action, even though they're supposed to be trying to lead the entire congregation or shepherd them in the right direction. And the same with the parent. You know, you're the head of the household, and you try to guide your children in the right way, but it's still up to the children to make that decision.
That's true. You're dealing with people who have moral wills of their own. That's true. Sean?
Paul thought being that if the elder had been dealing with the child that had problems and they had to show forgiveness, that would also help them be an elder.
Have a heart for what this work is all about when you're trying to redeem people who've been in their problems. Did I hear the bell? Okay. I got about one third of the way through what we need to talk about here. Ruth?
I was thinking about what you said about later on, you know, reinstalled as an elder. You know, there's a lot of kids that go through their teenage years with rebellion. I mean, they just go through that period of rebellion. And a parent struggles with that. I understand that we dealt with that with lots of kids with that period of rebellion. And then sometimes they just grow out of it. And I could see where later on when they grow out of it, and
yes. That's the reason I said to Tom, of course I don't know the answer to that given the information that we have there. The congregation will have some input into that. Now, I want to mention one other thing. Danny mentioned that I was referring to 1 Timothy. What does it mean to you that in both 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1, Paul issues this description of one who is able in this way, and the two passages are not word for word alike? What does that tell you? She said different situations, different people. I come at it from the other end. I think it tells us that he's talking about the same kind of man. And the fact that it's not word for word the same tells us this is not a checklist, that we're under obligation to look for the kind of person who's being talked about here and to deal with it in that way. Now, notice that in verse 7, the point is that this overseer is going to serve as God's steward. What is a steward?
Someone that can take care of something in a proper good way.
All right. I would add only one word. Someone who takes care of something that belongs to someone else in a proper and good way. So it's like if you ever use the babysitter, that babysitter would be a steward of your child or your children while they are in control of it, and you're going to want an answer when you show up and say, "How was my darling little one?" You know, you're going to want an answer for that, and that's what a steward is, and that's very much the work that elders have to do. Well, I wanted to get through this list. And we only barely touched the surface of it, but suffice it to say that just notice from the three things I have up here that the Lord meant for us not to separate out parts of this that are important to us from our perspective, but to look at this overall picture. So in a real way, I've not done us a favor today by looking at a few of them at one time. We'll try to look at this, let me just say it this way. Can a person be a good, strong, faithful Christian and not have children? Yes. Can a person be a good, strong, faithful Christian single? Yes. Could a person in either one of those situations serve as an elder? No, I don't think so. So you see, we're not talking about the whether the person is good enough to go to heaven or something like that. We're talking about whether in a given situation the person is in a spot where he's able to function in this way in the congregation. And the Lord's Word, the man himself, and the congregation all have some say in determining that. Tom?
I think part of my question, though, is you know, if I live to be 100 years old, my son is going to be 65.
Mm-hmm.
They're still my children.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I see. Let me take another stab at trying to answer. Let me add this part to it. It certainly would be the case that every person in life can grow. I hope when we get to the finish, we're still growing. And it's possible that a man it might be not that the people insisted or that he'd be rejected or anything. It could be that at that time he could decide it's not best that I try to serve. I don't feel like I'm qualified. And then 5 years later, it could be that a person has turned the life around and that the crisis has been worked through and that the person now says, I believe I would be able to serve.
But are we talking about, you know, children while they're in his home? Are we talking about once they become adults, they're still children. They're still his children. And I'm just asking, I'm just trying to understand because it's always been something that I've struggled with.
Yeah.
Well, when are we holding him to that?
Well,
the children of order and, you know, children that are all of a sudden adults that have to make their own decisions.
Yeah. Tom, the whole church has always struggled with this. There are not any easy answers to this. The question is, that has to be answered is, how does this, what has been this man's role in this relationship? He's not responsible for the children, of course, after they've left his home. He has no control over them in that way. But if he's their father, still how's the relationship? And what has been his role in this? And a lot of times, brothers and sisters in the congregation will have to help decide, is this best or not? It's not, never is it right just to ignore the qualification. But it is, the point is, these qualifications require mature and honest thinking overall. What if the man is not the greatest teacher in the world in a class setting? Is he unqualified? He has to be able to talk to someone and help someone see what the Lord wants him to do. Maybe he's better at that in a one-on-one setting. You know, the congregation has to decide something like that, but its leadership, the congregation will be the shadow of its leadership. It needs to be spiritual, solid leadership. And that's the idea that we're getting. We'll finish the talk next week. I know you all want to stay way past the bell, but thank you for being with us.